Okay, today's daf is Bava Basra daf Tzadi Tes. Today's shir and all the shirim throughout this week are sponsored by Henry and Mindy Orlinsky, L'zecher Nishmas Merab Bas Zachar Sassman, the mother of Mindy Orlinsky, the neshama should have an aliyah, and through this chus of our learning, and we thank the Orlinskys very much for the sponsorship. We're holding toward the end of the page in daf Tzadi Chesam Beis, and we're going to discuss a stira in Psukim in how tall the Kodesh HaKadoshim actually was, because one pasuk seems to indicate that it was 30 amos tall, the other that it was only 20 amos tall. So how do we resolve that stira? And that's going to lead us into a discussion of the positioning of the Kruvim and the possibility that the Kruvim didn't actually take up any space in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but the Gemara is going to have six rejections to the Raya that the Kruvim didn't take up any space, and is going to show how it's possible that they did take up space. The Gemara is then going to have a stira whether the Kruvim faced each other or they faced the Heichal, and we're going to resolve that stira regarding the Kruvim. Then the Mishnah on the bottom of Tzadi Tes Amud Aleph is going to discuss access that you have to a bar when that bar is in someone else's property. Can you just come at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, I want to access my bar? What exactly are the limitations of your rights to access your bar in somebody else's property? On a similar note, the following mission on the top of Tzadi Tes Amud Beis is going to discuss access you have to your gina when the only way to access your gina is to walk through somebody else's gina. What are the limitations when it comes to access your gina? The Gemara is going to discuss what if you buy the right to make some sort of waterway or a watering source in someone else's property. How much space do you get? How much space next to the watering source do you get? What happens if it caves in? Do you have other rights in the person's property? And then the last mission on the daf is going to discuss if someone has a derech that goes through their field, how much space does he have to give for that derech? And what if he tries to divert that derech to somewhere else? Does he have the right to divert that derech? But we'll get to all of that. But Baruch Hashem, we are holding on daf Tzadi Ches Amud Beis right now. We were discussing how it is that the Mishnah says that the proper ratio of height to length and width is supposed to be half the length plus half the width equals the height, kibinyan heichal, because that's the way the heichal was. So the Gemara had said that there were two deos, whether the Tanakama or Rabbi Shimon Gamliel mentioned this idea of kibinyan heichal. Is this something we're saying with certainty? Yes, it should be kibinyan heichal, or it's mitama. What, you think that everybody makes it like the heichal? So that was all within one shita, that the proper height should be half length plus half width. We are holding at Tanya Acherim Omrim, about 6 lines before the end of the page. Tanya Acherim Omrim, Romo Kikorosav. No, the proper height of a building should be the same as the length of the beams. The beams run across the width of a building so that you could then run the roofing across the length. So apparently, the height should equal the length of the beams. But says the Gemara, but that's just another way of saying that the height of the building should equal the width of the building, because the beams run across the entire width of the building. So why would you say like the beams? Why don't you just say that the height should be like the width of the building? So Gemara says, well, one possibility that of why we dafka say the beams as opposed to the width is because the width is different on the floor than it is toward the ceiling, toward the roof. Because the way they would build their houses is it actually becomes wider as it goes up, meaning the walls had a certain thickness to them, but the walls would actually narrow as you go up higher on the walls. So as the walls are narrowing, the space in between the walls is widening. So the beams that run across the top of the building are much longer than the space in between the walls at the bottom on the floor of the building. Or it could be that the reason the beams are somewhat longer than the full width of the building is because the beams need a place to rest. So they would make these notches in the walls that the beams would rest in. So the beams would actually extend further than the space in between the walls. Rabbi Chanina Nafak L'Kiryasa, Ramalei Kroya Adadi. They asked the following stira. Ksiv, Va'abayis HaShabana HaMelech Shlomo LaShem, the Beis HaMikdash HaShlomo HaMelech built, was Shishim HaMa'orcho, Ve'esrim Rechvo, 60 amos long, 20 amos wide, Ushloshim HaMakomaso, and 30 amos tall. Varuksiv, the pasuk also says in Malachim Aleph, "Lifnei Advir Esrim Ama Orech VeEsrim Ama Rochav." The Esramama Komaso, the Lefnei Advir, so we're talking about a more limited section. We're talking about the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself, so it's only 20 amos in length. We're not counting the full 60 amos, but the height should have been the same. And the height over here, it says, is 20 amos Komaso. So which is it? Is it 30 amos or is it 20 amos? Now, when we say 20 amos, it means 20 amos above the height of the Kruvim. 30 amos in total, but if you measure from the top of the Kruvim that Shlomo HaMelech made, because we are not talking about the Kruvim now that were on the Kapores, that were on the covering of the Aron that Moshe Rabbeinu had made. No, we're talking about the special Kruvim that Shlomo HaMelech had made that stood on the ground and were extremely tall. We're actually 10 amos tall off the ground. So above the height of the Kruvim was an additional 20 amos. Tosos points out something very unusual. Tosos writes, "Bepirush Mikra, Pirush Rashi." If you look at Rashi and Sefer Melachim Aleph, he writes, "Ditikra Dalias Heichal Haisa Gvah Mishal Kachi Hakadoshim Eser Amos." That there's a much simpler resolution between these two pesukim. That one pasuk is describing the Heichal in its entirety, and the other is describing specifically the area of the Kodesh Hakadoshim. So the height of the Heichal was 30 amos, and the height of the Kodesh Hakadoshim was 20 amos. No stira at all, says Tosos, below Ien Kan. Rashi must have skipped. Babasra daf tzadiches ambeiz. Rashbam wrote the perush over here. Rashi must have not paid attention to what it says in Babasra daf tzadiches ambeiz for Rashi to say such a pshat, because the Gemara asks the stira, and that is not the resolution the Gemara has. So obviously you can't just take that and say Rashi didn't know Babasra tzadiches ambeiz. It's not like just because we don't have perush Rashi of Babasra, Rashi didn't learn Babasra. Obviously he learned Babasra. So he was very well aware. The Rush, the Gra rather, in the Mishnah, in the commentary, in his commentary to the Mishnayos over here, says that there are other kashas the Chori could ask. He says, why is it that the height of the Bayis Sheni was more than the Bayis Rishon? The Bayis Rishon was 30 amos, the Bayis Sheni was 40 amos. If every other measurement was exactly the same, why would the height of all things all of a sudden change? And also, how can we learn from the height of the Beis HaMikdash anything about a house? Maybe the height of the Bayis, they had to pick a height. I mean, maybe that wasn't, you know, the very fact that it was different than the first and the second Bayis, maybe doesn't tells you that there was no set standard of how tall it had to be. So the Gra explains that this is in fact the machlokas between Tanakama and Rav Shmuel Gamliel. According to the Tanakama, the height of the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the first Bayis was 20 amos, and the reason that it was 20 amos was because you had to make it like you had to make the height equal half width plus half length. The length of the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 amos, the width was 20 amos, so the height had to be 20 amos, because half width plus half length was 20 amos. But by Sheni, there was no mechitza between the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the height of the entire Bayis had to be 40 amos, because the length of the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 60 amos in total between the Heichal and Kodesh HaKadoshim together. Since there was no wall, it has to be counted as a single room. So it was 60 amos. The width was 20 amos. So together, that's 80 amos. Half of that is 40. And that's why the height had to be 40 amos. So that's why Tanakhama brings a raya from the fact that they height of the Heichal and Bayis Sheni was more than Bayis Rishon. You see that Bedafka, these Shiurim have to be that exact ratio. However, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds that the height of the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the first Bayis was 30 Amos, so you can't bring any Raya at all from the Heichal, because the Heichal was 40 Amos by 20 Amos and 30 Amos tall. The Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 by 20 and 30 Amos tall. So you see, it doesn't have to be exactly this ratio, 20 by 20 and 30 Amos tall. Apparently, Rav Shmuel Gamliel disagrees with the entire premise that you need this ratio. So says the Gra, now I understand how to answer Rashi. How to answer Tosfos Kasha on Rashi. That the Rashi explained that the height of the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 amos. Yeah, the halacha, we pass on like the Tanakama, and therefore it had to be 20 amos. What about the stira we're asking in our sugya? Oh, we're only measuring the 20 amos from above the Kruvim. That's Ladas from Rishon Gamliel, who holds that the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 30 amos, meaning, says the Gra, to Machlokas Tanayim. So Rashi in Malachim is saying like what we hold the halacha, like the Tanakama. Our Gemara's entire discussion is Shaloka halacha, only within the Shita of Rishon Gamliel. Says Gemara, "My kamashmalan, what's the chiddush? How kamashmalan? Meaning, why would the navi dafka tell us the height of the kodesh kedoshim above the kruvim? Just tell us the whole height of the room. Why would you only start measuring above the kruvim? How kamashmalan? Lemata kilamala is trying to tell us that there's something we can learn about the space below the kruvim from what we know about the space above the kruvim. Mala mala ein meshamish klum. Just like it's obvious that there was nothing going on in the space above the kruvim, there was nothing you could put there in midair. Aflamata in meshamish klum. So too, in the space where the kruvim stood, it didn't actually take up any space. This is a raya to that notion that we have. The Rebbe Levi taught us that the space of the Aron and the space of the kruvim didn't actually take up any space. It was Eina Minamida, didn't actually take up any space in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Marsha explains that the Aron and the Kruvim didn't take up any space in the Kodesh HaKadoshim because the Shekhinah was Shora on them. That's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be Medaber to Moshe. Pasuk says, V'dibarti itcha me'ala kaporos mi'bein shnei HaKruvim asher al Aron ala Eidus. And any Dava Ruchni, anything that's purely spiritual, does not take up space in an Olam HaGashmi. Melochala aretz kvodo. So that's why it had to be Eina Minamida to signify just how much of a Dava Ruchni we're dealing with. That was B'nei Sayu Omdin, that all of it was Eina Min Amida. Says Martani Namiachi, Arun Shosa Moshe, Yeshlo Revach Eser Amos Kol Ruach V'ruach. We have a riot to this idea. The Arun that Moshe Rabbeinu made had 10 Amos of space on either side of it. But the whole room was only 20 Amos. How could it have 10 Amos of space on either side of it? Because it's Eina Min Amida. Pointed out in the past, Rav Mendel Blachman once spoke in my house to a number of Talmidim, and he said, you know, he asked the boys, what was the greatest miracle that ever happened? And, you know, they were thinking Kriyas Yamsuf, this great miracle, that great miracle. He said, no, the greatest miracle that ever happened is this, is Makom Aron Eina Min Amida, because every other miracle, we could at least picture it happening. We could picture how that we don't know, it can't be explained by nature, but we could picture it in our mind's eye, water turning to blood. We could picture water splitting. What is Eina Min Amida? How do you draw Eina Min Amida? Meaning it's not even something that our mind has the ability to grasp the notion of Eina Min Amida. So Amar Rav Nayi, Amar Shmuel, Kruvim B'nei Sayinim Omdin, Shinam Rav Chamish Amos Knaf HaKruv HaChas, V'chamish Amos Knaf HaKruv HaShenis, Eser Amos Miktsos Knaf V'Aktsos Knafav, that the two wings of each of the Kruvim took up 10 Amos, that if you measured the span of each of the wings was 5 Amos, so together it's 10 Amos of each of the Kruvim. So Gufayu Hechavukaimi. So where exactly did the bodies go? If you measure the span from one to the other, it was 10 Amos, and each one was 5 Amos. Where was the body of the Karuv? It had to go somewhere. So you see that the Kruvim themselves were Eina Min Amida, that the bodies of the Kruvim were Eina Min Amida. Shmamina, B'nei Sayomdin. You see that it was in fact B'nei Sayomdin. The Achronim raised the question, how do you know it was B'nei Sayomdin? The Gemara Menachos and Afsadi Zayin tells us that part of what we're saying that B'nei Sayom did was that together the two Kruvim should have taken up 20 Amos, and the whole size of the room was 20 Amos, so they never could have fit in the especially if you then account for the extra space of the body, so then 20 Amos of wings plus body can't fit in a room that's only 20 Amos. So the Achronim raised the question that the Gemara Menachos tells us that the Midos of Binyan are different than the midos of kelim. Meaning, even though we use the word amma when we describe the size of the binyan, and we use the word amma when we describe the size of the kelim, the amos of the binyan are 6 tefachim amos. The amos of the kelim are 5 tefach amos. So how do you know B'nei Sayomdin? Maybe the amos of the kruvim that we're describing are 5 tefach amos, that those are kelim, whereas the amos of the binyan are 6 tefach amos, and that's why there was space. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes that the Kruvim of the Beis HaMikdash were Mechubel Karka. So we would never use Amos of Kalim to describe the Kruvim. It would always be Amos HaBinyan. This probably relates to a broader topic of whether the Aron is considered a Klei HaMikdash or it's just part of the definition of Mikdash. That's a major discussion in the Rishonim. Is there a mitzvah of Binyan Kalim Mitzvah Binyan of the Aron, and how the Aron might be separate. Important Ramban's Al-Torah about this. But anyway, so that's the discussion some of the Achronim have. But the Gemara, anyway, has six different rejections for this idea. It doesn't necessarily have to be that it was B'nei Sayyomdin, just because the wings alone would have taken up 20 Amos, and the bodies had to go somewhere. That doesn't necessarily mean that it can't fit in a room that's 20 Amos. Why? Because six reasons. Number one, Maskla Abaye, Vidilma, Bolton, Katar, and the Golan have a Kaimi. That a chicken has its wings come directly out of its back. It's not off to the sides. It comes right out of the middle of the back. So it could be that the wings take up 10 Amos, but the body doesn't take up any additional space because the body's directly under the wings. As Tosus points out, it still would have required a miracle, Tosus says. Vim Tomer, Akati B'nei Sayyomdin, Da'esrim Ba'esrim Echiyasvi. Still, meaning, so now we're saying that the full size of the wings plus the Kruvim is not more than 20 Amos. It's exactly 20 Amos. Says Tosus, it's still miraculous to fit something that's exactly 20 Amos into a room that's 20 Amos. You need some wiggle room. You need an etzba or something, to wiggle it in there. So how could it be that 20 Amos fits in 20 Amos? It's still an ace. So says Tosus, Yeshomer mikol makom parach habayi shaguf lo ya omid b'neis. But still, he's saying that's not a raya that the guf was omid b'neis. It's that the wings fit into the room. That was nace. But the guf itself may have, in fact, taken up space. It's just that the guf didn't take up additional space beyond the wings because it was directly under the wings. Second raya or rejection to the raya that they were b'nei soyomdin, maskva rava, vidilma zeshlo kenegazeh, Havukaimi. Who says that they were directly across from each other, and therefore each kruv, which took up 10 amos, was directly next to each other, that took up it? Maybe they were not directly across from each other, and therefore you didn't have to measure 20 amos directly across. Maskar Vachabar Yaakov, a third rejection. Vidimla Balchson Havukaimi. Who says they were going from one end of the room to the other? Maybe they were placed at a diagonal across the room. The diagonal is, in a 20 by 20 room, the diagonal is much more than 20 amos. So maybe that's how the Kruvim managed to fit. Maskar of Huna, fourth rejection, Breder of Yeshua, Vidilma Besa Me'ilai Ravach. Maybe the 20 amos by 20 amos measurement was on the floor, but as we said before, when you build structures, the walls are thicker at the bottom than they are at the top, so the room widens toward the top. So these Kruvim are pretty high off the ground, and the room widens at the top. Maybe that's how they fit. Maskar of Papa, fifth rejection, Vidilma Mechaf Avukaifi Yadaihu. Maybe their wings were bent over, so they if they're angled at a certain way, and that's why they don't take up the full length of the room, because they might be five amos long, but they could also be standing straight up in the air as opposed to across. It could be that they were at some sort of angle where it doesn't take up the full amos. Mask of Ravashi is sixth and final rejection. Dilma shalchufei havu mishalchufi. Maybe they were mishalchufi. What does that mean? Says Rashbam. Shalchufei havu mishalchufi adaihu. Says Rashbam. Knaf al knaf kadam shechobek es yadav. That maybe they overlapped each other. The wings of one karuv were directly on top of the wings of the other karuv. Kedusiv shikel as yadav. Like by Yaakov Avinu, we describe shikel as yadav, that they overlapped, that one went over the other. Metargamina betargam Eretz Yisrael, shalchifunun liyadaihu. Kein pirush rach, that shikel as yadav with the targum is shalchifunun. So that's how you see that this word shalchufei means that there was an overlap to each other. So that's why we don't necessarily have a raya that the body of the karuv was b'nei sayomid. How were the Kruvim positioned? Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Lazar. So Machlokes Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Lazar. Chad Amar Pneim Isha Lachiv. One says that they were facing each other. The Chad Amar Pneim Lebayis, that they were facing toward the Heichal. Says Gemara, Madiam Pneim Isha Lachiv, Haksiv Upneim Lebayis. If you say that they were facing each other, what do you do with the pasuk that says Upneim Lebayis? Lo kasha, kan bizman she Yisrael olsen ritzono shel makom, kan bizman she ein Yisrael olsen ritzono shel makom. It all depended on what the Jewish people were doing at that time. When we were olsen ritzono shel makom, they were facing each other. When we were not doing the will of Hashem, they were facing toward the bayis. Ulman Yamar Pneim Labayis Haksiv Upneim Ishalachiv. But the one that says that the Pneim Labayis, what are you going to do with the Pasuk Upneim Ishalachiv? So why don't we just give the same answer? I'll do the same thing the other guy did with the Pasuk, that it depends when they're also Ritzon Hashem Makom and they're not also Ritzon Hashem Makom. No, the one that says Pneim Labayis means that that's the way they were originally set up. So it says Tosfos, you can't say Lov Matzil Lememer Kan Bizman Shisol Otsum Ritzon Hashem Makom. It's unlikely that they would have set them up in the position of Enos and Ritzon Hashem Makom. That would be a terrible omen to try to set them up originally in the position that they would be in when we're doing terrible things. So obviously you would want to set them up in the position that they would be in when we're behaving ourselves. So we need another explanation of why it says that they would face each other. It can't be about Enos and Ritzon Hashem Makom. So says Mar de Mitzadadi at Studei. They were at an angle where they were partially facing each other and also partially facing the Hechel. The Tanya Unklus Hager Amar Kruvim Maisa Tzatzuim Hein. The Kruvim were Maisa Tzatzuim, which means that they had the face of a Tinokas. They had the face of young children. Umetzudadim Pneim Ketalmid Anifter Mirabo. And their faces were at an angle like a Talmud who's taking leave of his Rebbe. So it's not entirely Pneim Ishalachiv, nor is it entirely that they were Pneim Labayis. It's sort of at some sort of angle. The Rashbam quotes that the pasuk that it says that the Kruvim were Pneim Ishalachiv was talking about the Kruvim in the Mishkan that were on top of the Kaporis or on top of the Aron. The pasuk that says that the Kruvim were Pneim Labayis is about the Kruvim in the Beis Hamikdash that were on the Karka that Shlomo HaMelech made. So the Ritva raises the question, why is this a machlokas at all? The two Pesukim aren't talking about the same Kruvim. How could he ask some sort of stira? Oh, which way were they facing? Was it this way? There were different sets of Kruvim. So what kind of kasha the Rashbam also raises? What kind of kasha is the Gemara asking? According to the Man Yomer, they were Pneim Labayis from the Pasuk about the Mishkan, or the Man Yomer Pneim Ishalach from the Pasuk about the Mikdash. They're not talking about the same Kruvim at all. So the Ritva, the Rashbam, both suggest that it's most mistaver that if Shlomo HaMelech added Kruvim, that he made the Kruvim in a way that would mimic the Kruvim of Moshe Rabbeinu, that he would not have made an entirely new setup for these Kruvim, that they must have been facing the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu's Kruvim were. We wouldn't change things. In fact, some of the Achronim use this as the Raya that when they discussed after the Reform movement started whether you're allowed to move the Bima from the middle of the Shul to the front of the Shul, because that's how the Reformers wanted to do it. It looks more like a church that way, in the church service where everything's from the front. So they said you're not allowed to change the tzura of a Beis HaKnesses, because we see even in that was true of a Mikdash, that we're making the assumption that if you made Kruvim, that the Kruvim had to mimic the original Kruvim. So in a Mikdash Ma'at also, one is not allowed to change at all the surah of the Mikdash. Now we had mentioned that when Yisrael is also in Ritzon Hashem Makom, the Kruvim face each other. When they're not also in Ritzon Hashem Makom, they face the Heichal. So Rav Yonis Naibshitz in Ya'aros Devash and Drush Tes explains what the meaning of that is. He points out that the two Kruvim, one of them represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu and one of them represents Knesset Yisrael. So when we're also in Ritzon Hashem Makom, it's like talking Yish Alachiv. When we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's direct. Hashem hears our tefillos in a very direct kind of way. When we're Enos in Ritzon Hashem Makom, it's necessary for all of our tefillos to go via the Beis HaMikdash. We can't talk directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why we face toward the Makom HaMikdash when we daven. We try to, ideally at least, we try to face toward the Makom HaMikdash when we daven, because all of our tefillos have to go derech the Makom HaMikdash. So that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu receives them. So we're both facing the Heichal when it's Enos in Ritzon Hashem Makom, because that's the only way we're going to be able to communicate, by going toward the Makom HaMikdash. That is how Rabbi Yonis Naibshitz explains. Now, this sugya seems to be a little bit different than the way the Gemara in Maseches Yuma describes it. In our sugya, it sounds that according to everybody, the Kruvim were not attached or hugging or in anything like that. They were facing each other or facing away from each other. That's the whole discussion. But the Gemara Maseches Yuma tells us, Amar Rav Ketina, Daf Nun Dalin, Maseches Yuma, that when Klal Yisrael were Olah L'Regel, they would unfold unfurl the parochas. They would unroll they would roll up the parochas rather, so that people could see the kruvim, and the kruvim were mu'urim zebazeh, that they were sort of mingled with each other. And they would say ru'uchi baschem lifnei hamakom, that the kruvim are hugging each other. And Reish Lakish over there says that when the nachrim came into the heichal and they saw the kruvim mu'urim zebazeh, they were mevazeh klal Yisrael. Look what a disgusting image they have in their kodesh hakodashim of a boy and a girl that are hugging each other. But you see that the kruvim were mu'urim zebazeh, not just facing each other or facing away, mu'urim. So the Rishonim answer that this neis was b'shas aliyah l'regel dafka, to show klal Yisrael the chibel of Nei Kodesh Baruch Hu, and b'shas churban habayis dafka, to punish them for being mezalzel, to punish the goyim for being mezalzel in the kruvim. But throughout the year is what our sugi is talking about. When it wasn't time of aliyah l'regel, when it wasn't the time of the shalosh regalim, when it wasn't the time of churban, so it was just the our gemara is just questioning what the exact positioning of the kruvim are. So that's where our gemara says, yeah, sometimes we're also ritzon shlomakom, they're facing each other. Enos ritzon shlomakom, they're not. The Ritva thinks not a kasha at all. The gemara says that they didn't really show them the kruvim. They showed them a dmus kruvim that was mitsuyar on the parochas, that they had an image of the kruvim that was woven into the parochas. But the kruvim themselves, in a chinami, were not hugging each other. It was just the dmus of the kruvim on the parochas that they would show them when they would unfurl the parochas. The Ritva Maseches Yuma raises another question. The Gemara over there says that b'shas churban the kruvim were hugging each other because but l'chora b'shas churban we were not osin ritzon v'shal makom. And our Gemara says that when we're osin ritzon v'shal makom, the kruvim are closer. When we're ain't osin ritzon v'shal makom, they're further apart. Well, we obviously weren't osin ritzon v'shal makom at the shas churban because the churban was happening. HaKadosh Baruch Hu obviously saw a need for a churban. So the Ritva quotes Yesh Shetirtzu, that the kruvim were mu'urim, those are not the kruvim of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Those are the kruvim that were mitsuyar on the parochas. But then he rejects that because then why? In what way are they showing klal Yisrael chibasam lefnei hamakom? Those kruvim were always mu'urim. The ones on the parochas were always mu'urim. That wouldn't show any chibal lefnei hamakom if those kruvim were connected to each other. It has to be the real kruvim. That's the only sign of chiba. So the Ritva quotes the teretz of the Rimi Gash, that dafka b'shas churban it happened al yidei neis, so that the goyim would be mezalzel and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have something to pay the goyim back with. But that's it. It was dafka an exception b'shas churban. Others suggest there was HaKadosh Baruch Hu showing that even in churban he still loves us, that he dafka had to make a demonstration that we shouldn't think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has abandoned us b'shas churban, which is likely how one is going to feel. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us that little bit of a sense of closeness even in our abandonment, similar to Rechaim Shmulevitz's vart. He probably brings this as the raya. I think Rechaim Shmulevitz says when in Sichus Musar about Yosef at Tzaddik, when he's being sold out to Mitzrayim, he goes on a caravan that has sweet smelling spices. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to reward him. I mean, he's being sold away from his family, he doesn't know what even at the time when we're being pushed away, even at the time where it's most challenging, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us a little bit of sweetness, a little bit of a silver lining, so that we could realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still with us, that he hasn't entirely abandoned us. One more point: the Gemara Maseches Yuma raises the question. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says that Asara Nisim Nasu Beis Hamikdash, that there are 10 miracles that happened in the Beis Hamikdash. The Mishnah doesn't mention this Makom Aron Einu Min Amida as one of the Nisim, and also that the Kruvim were Omid B'Neis. So the Gemara says that the Mishnah only counts those Nisim that were B'chutz, not the Nisim that were in the Beis Hamikdash, so that were in the Kodesh HaKadashim. So the Gemara asks Vayter, the Neis of the Lechem HaPanim, that they never found the Psul in the Lechem HaPanim, is counted in the Mishnah, even though it was in the Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara says, no, but they would lift up the Shulchan and show it to Klal Yisrael in order to show them the Chibas HaMakom, how Kodesh Baruch Hu loved them, that the Lechem HaPanim was still fresh, which was an enormous miracle, especially when you consider the fact that the Lechem HaPanim was matzah. If you ever buy Sfardi matzahs, I try to buy one box of Sfardi matzahs each year, so they're thicker matzahs. So on the instructions of the box, it says keep it frozen, because if you leave it unfrozen, it will turn into a brick. It will become hard like a... the dough never had a chance to rise, so when you leave it just out, it's going to be hard, as brittle as our matzahs are. If you have thick, you know, the lechem apanim was a tefachai, so imagine how there were these big, naturally they would turn into bricks. There's no way they would be soft and fresh, but that was the miracle that everyone would see. So that's not as if it was in the Mikdash itself, because you'd be able to see it from the outside. So the Tosi Shonim over there raises the question that in the Gemara, it's Mavur, that they would show the Kruvim to Klal Yisrael as well, in order to show the Chibas HaMakom. So the same answer you have for the Lechem HaPanim, why the Lechem HaPanim gets listed as a miracle, you could say the same thing for the Kruvim. We would also get to see the Kruvim. It would fit much better if you say that we didn't see the actual Kruvim, that we only saw the image of the Kruvim on the Paroches. So that's why the actual Kruvim could be a nace that doesn't get mentioned in the Mishnah. There are other Teretz and Rishonim have as well, but that Lechor is the simplest Teretz. Okay, new Mishnah now, bottom of Tzadites Amud Aleph. Mishi yesh lo bor lifnim mi beso shel chavero. Let's say you have a bor that you need to go through your friend's house in order to access your bor. So how much access do you get to your bor? Can you just go in whenever you want? Nichnas b'shah shederech b'nei adam nichnasin v'yotzei b'shah shederech b'nei adam yotzin. You can only go in and out of his house at a time that's normal to go in and out of someone's house. If it's too late at night to knock on someone's door, so then you cannot knock on the door in order to access your bar. Ve'eino machnas behemto u'mashka mibaro elam emalei mashka mibachutz. Additionally, you're not allowed to bring your animal to drink directly from the bar, because that would mean bringing your animal through someone else's house, and that's not right. Rather, you should go get the water, bring the water outside, and then you'll be mashka the behemos outside the house. Vizel osalo posachas, vizel osalo posachas. But both parties have the right to make a lock on the bar. So says Mar posachas lehecha. What's the lock for? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, shneim lebar. The posachas, this lock is for the bar. Bishlam a bala bar ba'ilish tamuri ma'ay debore. Well, I understand why the owner of the bar would want to make a lock. It's in someone else's property. He wants to protect the water of his bar, make sure that the balabais is not stealing his water. Ela balabais lamali. Why would the balabais need to put a lock on the bar to stop the balabar from opening the bar? So Amar Rav Lazar, mishum chashad ishto. Now we're afraid that if the balabar had access to the bar whenever anyone gave him access to the house, and he didn't have a lock to get through in order to access his bar, people would be choshed, the Baal Habayis's wife with the balabar, because the balabar would be coming at all hours of the day when the balabayis is not home in order to access the bar. This way the balabar has to wait. Now that there's a lock on it, he has to wait till the balabayis comes home, because the balabayis didn't share the key to that lock with his wife. So the balabayis has to make a posachas because of chshad ishto. The sma in Simkuf Samachtas explains that if the balabar were able to enter when the balabayis was not in the house, they would be mezana with the wife of the balabayis, and he would always be able to say, he'd always have an alibi. Oh, I came into this house because I came to get water, and he's and that will always be his excuse. And even if he's not going to be mezana with her, someone who's going to see it will be choshed that there's znus going on. So even if we're not actually concerned, but we have to protect our reputations as well. So that's why they made this takana, in order that we shouldn't have any sort of chashad. However, the Rambam in Hilchos Shchein in Perek Vav Halacha Yud Gimel writes that since you can't get there without the balabayis, the wife of the balabayis is not going to go shalom midaito. Sounds like the chshad is that the wife is going to go to the makom of the bar, and she's going to be mezana with the balabar. And if the balabayis finds them there, she's going to say that she went to get some water or to take care of something else. So they're mesakein that the balabayis makes a key that the wife has no reason to go to the bar because she can't access the bar anyway. So slightly different interpretation, but along the same lines. Okay, says the new Mishnah, if you have a garden, that the only way to access your garden is going through your friend's garden, so again, you can't access it whenever you want, under any conditions, because you're going to be you're going to be trampling through your friend's garden all the time. So that's not right. Rather, nichnas b'shah shederach b'nei adam nichnasim, v'yotze b'shah shederach b'nei adam yotzin. You go in at a normal time, you leave at a normal time, v'eino machnas l'tocha tagarin. You also cannot bring in merchants who you may want to supply with their vegetables to the garden to see where you're growing the vegetables and to take a look at it. No, you'll have to pick the vegetables, bring them out, and then show them to the merchants. You can't schlep the merchants through your neighbor's garden. You also can't use that as an access point for another field, because you're only allowed to go to that garden when you need to go to the garden, not when you need to go to some other field. And even the path that you have the right to go through in order to get to your garden, the guy who owns the outer garden is allowed to plant on that path, even though that's a little annoying for you, that you're going to have to be stepping on whatever he planted. Yeah, you'll have to put up with that annoyance because he has the right to plant there. Nasnul derech minatzad midashneim. But if the Beis Din came to some sort of agreement with these two people that you're going to have a path along the side of the garden and not directly through your neighbor's garden, then nichnas b'shah shurotza v'yotze b'shah shurotza. Then he's allowed to access it anytime he wants. Then it's not he doesn't have to do it only during the daytime. Umachnas l'tocha tagarin, and then he's allowed to bring in merchants because the traffic is no longer a major concern. But still, v'lo yikonis mitocha l'tochstei acheres. You still shouldn't use it as an access point for other fields, because that was not part of the agreement. The agreement was that you need constant access to your garden. You'll get as much access to your garden as you need. So that's what this path is for. V'ze v'ze in rasha l'zora. And if they came to such an agreement, then neither the balginas ha'pnim nor the balginas ha'chutz are allowed to plant that path. Amruv Dom Rishmuel, Amma Beis HaShlach and Ani Mochalach. If a guy says, I am selling you an Amma Beis HaShlach, and you have a field that cannot survive on rainwater alone, it needs to be irrigated, so I'm selling you an area in the field to make an irrigation canal. So how much space do you need for an irrigation canal? Nosin lo Beis Amos L'tocha, v'amma mikan la'akpeha. You need two Amos of the actual space of the canal itself, and one Amma on either side for the edges. Amma beis hakilon ani mochalach. If you say that I'm selling you not an amma beis hashlachin, but I'm selling you an amma beis hakilon, so that's a smaller waterway to wash your clothing, to give your animals to drink. It's not something from which you're going to need to irrigate an entire field. So then, no sin lo amma achas l'tocha. You don't need a two amma wide area. One amma of width is plenty. And then you only need a half of an amma on each side. Who gets to plant on those edges, on the ledges of these waterways? That this amma on each side in the first case, or half an amma on each side in the second case? Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Bala Sada Zoram, the owner of the field, gets to plant there. Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel Bala Sada Notam, that not just to be Zorea, but to be Noteya. So Noteya means trees, Zorea means things that are not trees, things of vegetables or grain. So Mandi Amar Zoram Kolshke Notam. If you only allowed to be Zorea there, then you're for sure allowed to be Noteya, because trees do less damage to the neighboring waterways than than Zriya does. Since Zriya, the roots don't go that far down, so it will immediately go off to the sides and damage the area. But a tree's roots will go further down before it starts spreading to the sides, so it will already be under the waterway. Mandiyamar Notam Aval Zoram Lo. If you say that you're allowed to be Noteya, that does not mean you're allowed to be Zorea. Because it will destroy the waterway if you're Zoreya. So what if you have this Amas HaMayim and the ledges started caving in? So now you need to rebuild the ledges of the Amas HaMayim. So osa sada. You're allowed to be misakin it from the field itself. You could take other dirt from that field in order to fix it. Because it's only going to work from that field, as Rashbam explains. Not that it's only going to work. Meaning, if the side walls came down, it came down into the sides of the field. So you're just gathering back the dirt that rightfully belonged to you to begin with. And that's why you're allowed to take it from that field. Why can't the guy tell him your water is what brought down the walls on the side of the water? So it didn't and it imploded. It brought it into the waterway. So you can't just collect from my field. Ella Amar Rav Papa, you're right. The reason you're allowed to take the dirt from the field is not because that's where the dirt necessarily went. We don't know that the dirt necessarily went there. Rather, it's Sha'al Menas Kein Kibbal Alav Balasada. The Balasada understood, when I'm allowing you to make an Amas Hamayim, I'm also allowing you the right to rebuild the sides of the Amas Hamayim from my field, should those sides of the Amas Hamayim cave in. Bez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up at the Mishnah.